We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, 13th Chapter, verses 58 to 64. Rama stealing the boys and the calves. Verse 58. Tatur vak patilav dhakshaka puret Tavarutita Pichat Umiliyav Vaidishtir Achest Achest Achastiram Sahatmana. Lord Brahma's external consciousness then revived, and he stood up just like a dead man coming back to life. Opening his eyes with great difficulty, he saw the universe along with himself. Mukham karati vachana pangalangayate kriyakitanmaham vande shivrinachana Om jnana chimerandasya gyananjara sharataya chakshumiricham yena tasamaye shikarave namaha. So what do you remember from last class? We have allowed the modes of passion and ignorance to affect us. We have to take another body. We are implicating ourselves. By the glands, he creates the desires to serve him, and by his smile, he maintains, protects. Even by the glands also, he also maintains. What is it in the glance of the Lord that maintains the devotees? Yes?
Affection.
Affection, right. So we are being maintained in our spiritual life by the affection of Krishna. That is how we are being maintained. Otherwise, we cannot go on in our devotional service. Krishna loves us, and he's maintaining us with that love. And otherwise, we wouldn't be able to do anything for him. Okay, what else? Yes? Swabhava, become nature, second nature. Okay, if we don't want to be implicated in another body, then we should get good association. Because by good association, we develop good habits, and those good habits become our nature, second nature. And our nature, after that, what happens? Our nature changes, but then that good nature from the good habits becomes our next life. And that will be our next life. We'll have this new nature. We won't have the nature we were born with this time. Thank God. But we will have a much better nature that we will be born with. And yes? Avaroha Panta. Avaroha Panta means the descending, acceptance of the descending knowledge. Anything else? Shanta?
We heard so many different levels of reality.
Yes.
How
yes, the material energy covers reality, shows us something that's not. But sometimes, it says, sometimes it shows us and sometimes it doesn't. Yeah, so Yogamaya is tricky. We don't always see with Yogamaya. Sometimes Krishna is in our heart and sometimes we'll see him and sometimes we won't.
We have an interesting manifestation.
Yes. Yeah, sometimes we enact jhamas in the dham. I remember that. From Govardhan, when Mother Yashoda and Krishna there that year. And she was so loving mother to Krishna. And her name is Sachi Mata, or Sachi Devi, Sachi Devi. Sachi Devi was such a good Yashoda. And the Krishna was a good Krishna, very mischievous.
The experience.
I remember the drama. I mean, I don't know if it was supposed to be a drama, but something was happening at Tirukkadamba this year. With the pujari of the temple was telling one lila, and then the translator was so straight that he couldn't get into the bhava, and he just didn't like the translator. It was a real straight Hindi speaking person, young man, who was really not in the mood, and so the guy puts a sari on the translator. He covers his head. Puts it over his face so he gets in the mood, but still the guy was so I remember that. That Brijabasi was really funny. Yeah, you just put the sari on the guy. And himself, they were both had their faces covered and they were doing some leela. The gopis were coming in the morning and Krishna was playing his flute over there. And if the flower was on the one ear, it meant go east. Yeah. And if it was on the other ear, it meant go west. But the translator was... Anyway, yeah. They have there's a certain bhava. And it comes out when you do the drama. Yeah, yes. Okay, what else to remember? You already had your turn. Parvati.
I read that if we read Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, then everything will be clarified.
Okay, if we read Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, everything will be clarified. Anything else we remember? Aranarthas will be removed if we read Bhagavatam. Nasta prayesh abhadveshu. Nityam Bhagavata sevaya. Right. Time is the main person in the drama of the material world. Time is... Remember that analogy of the frying pan? That we're all being fried in the frying pan. What was time? Was it the stirring ladle? The ladle? It's a spoon that stirs. So time stirs us around, moves us from here to there, moves us, makes us change our bodies, makes us change our forms, change our minds even. And it's all time, kala. And so what was the last thing that Brahma saw before this verse?
Nothing.
He just blacked out. That was it. He couldn't see. Yeah. He reached his limit of his... power to see. It was just blown. He was blown, actually, as we say. Yes. Huh? I can't understand the word you are saying.
She said Brahma merged in Brahma Jyoti.
Brahma merged.
Merged.
No. He didn't merge. He was just stunned. He was having an ecstatic symptom, according to Nectar of Devotion, of being stunned. He was feeling. It may feel like you merge when you lose all your senses. You may have that feeling. I guess when you merge, it's the same thing happens. Except there's light, but he didn't have anything. He didn't get that light either. Okay, so now he's seeing the universe, himself, and himself, okay? So that's the next level of reality. He's seeing the universe and himself. All around, that's the material world. He's seeing the material world, the material reality. This is the next thing. Now, Prabhupada gets into preaching here in the purport that... about death, we don't die. At death, we just keep inert for some time, just as during sleep. At night, we sleep, and all our activities stop. As soon as we arise, our memory immediately returns, and we think, oh, where am I? What do I have to do? This is called suptotita nyaya. Okay? So then, in the middle of the purport, a little bit down, he quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Maya Bhashe Jachobe Shikacho Hobu Dubupai. My dear brothers, why are you being washed away by the waves of Maya? One should come to the spiritual platform, and then one's activities will be permanent. Krita Punya Punja. This stage is attained after one accumulates the results of pious activities for many, many lives. So Prabhupada is explaining different levels of reality in the purport. First level is the waves of Maya, which is what 99% of everyone in this world is experiencing, only liberated souls, maybe even less than that. 99.9999% of the people of this world are experiencing the waves of Maya. And there's a few devotees who are transcendental, not that many. So then there's another level of reality, the spiritual platform. And then one's activities will be permanent. So we've got two levels. We can live on a level of reality where our activities are temporary, or we can live on a level of reality where our activities are permanent. So that's our constant choice. Janma koti sukritar na labhyate. The Krishna conscious movement wants to stop koti janma, repeated birth and death. In one birth, one should rectify everything and come to permanent life. This is Krishna consciousness. So this is our birth of rectification. This life is for us to rectify, change ourselves, become devotees. As we heard in the last class about changing our nature. This is our time, our chance to change our nature. So let's see. Brihad Bhagavatamrita has something to say here about Lord Brahma and his realization. Let's see what it says. there's two verses. That one Lord of Vaikuntha, Sri Krishna, resides in various places and appears in many forms just to give pleasure to all of his multitude of servants. So this verse tells the realization of Brahma, what he realized after this pastime, why the Lord comes to give pleasure to his servants. Then the next verse, Sri Brahma perceived this truth when he stole Krishna's boys and calves in the forests of Vrindavan, and I realized it while wandering among the many palaces in the city of Dwarka. So Narada Muni is speaking, and he said he got that realization when he was visiting the different palaces of Krishna. So what Sanatana Goswami says, as this incident confirms, the Supreme Lord is always real, whether he be one or many. So that was the lesson to learn from that particular verse and this pastime, that the Lord is real. We're talking about reality now. So he didn't get up to that level of reality. He's just seeing the universe and he's seeing himself. So first awareness he got was external. He came to his external senses and he saw, okay, here's the universe and here's me. That's his first level. Now, 59, we're going to have the next level of reality. Then looking in all directions, Lord Brahma immediately saw Vrindavan before him, filled with trees, which were the means of livelihood for the inhabitants and which were equally pleasing in all seasons. So which one is reality? Is the first thing or the second thing he's seeing now? Second thing is reality. This is reality. Vrindavan full with trees. So we walk through these different levels of reality because we're living in Vrindavan. We have that choice actually. That, you know, are we going to see Vrindavan or are we going to see the universe and ourselves here in Vrindavan? What reality are we going to see? Which reality of Vrindavan? So purport, Prabhupada says, Jana, Jivya, Duma, Kirnam. Trees and vegetables are essential and they give happiness all year round, in all seasons. That is the arrangement in Vrindavan. It is not that in one season the trees are pleasing, in another season not pleasing. Rather, they are equally pleasing throughout the seasonal changes. Trees and vegetables provide the real means of livelihood recommended for everyone. Sarva kama dukkama hi. Trees and vegetables, not industry, provide the real means of life. So I'll just read, because it's talking about the seasons. I'm going to read a little bit about the seasons of Vrindavan. The six seasons. So the forests are divided, the forest of Vrindavan is divided into six sections to display the six seasons. Though resembling their material counterparts, the six seasons of Vrindavan are completely transcendental since they nourish the spiritual bliss of Krishna's pastimes. So we may think there's no time. They say there's no time in the spiritual world, but there is time in another sense because there's different seasons that happen. There's day, there's night, and there's seasons. But it's not like here. The six seasons are known as the joy of monsoon, the pleasure of autumn, the satisfaction of winter, the happiness of the dewy season, the beauty of spring, and the auspicious season of summer. Mm-hmm. So they all have... dewy season is happiness.
Where's this from?
This is Nanvrindavan Champu. Yeah. See, there's actually... We say 12 seasons, but they have six seasons. And then, also, sometimes these six seasons, they put two together. So that's also here. They do this in Vrindavan. Six distinct seasons manifest in Vrindavan. So we got that. That's What are those six? There's summer, winter, summer, fall, winter, dewy season, and spring and monsoon. Spring and monsoon. Dewy means dew, D-E-W. It means this misty mist. You know, when the mist comes. Here it says it's after the winter, but before it's. But in some calendars, I see it before winter. Hemanta, and then winter. So here it's interesting. So here it says six seasons manifest in Vrindavan, plus three seasons appearing in pairs: autumn and winter together, dewy and spring together, summer and monsoon. In this way, Vrindavan features nine seasonal forests. So we got six seasons, then we got three pairs, and then there's one more forest.
Where everything
at the same time. You got all the six seasons in one forest all at the same time. Only in Vrindavan. So here it says, the summer, we're down here. In the tenth forest, all six seasons at once, the youthful gopis take fresh kadamba flowers from the rainy season, fix them in their hair parts. They twirl autumn season lotuses in their petal-like fingers, smear the pollen of winter lodra flowers on their cheeks, put bantuli flowers from the dewy season around their necks, bunches of ashok buds from the spring over their ears, and entwine malika garlands in their hair from the summer season. Every day the Vrajagopis beautifully decorate themselves like this to worship their beloved Lord Krishna. Here it says, the sweet sounds of bees and cuckoos echo through the kunjas that are lit by phosphorescent vines. Mm. There you go. Here's the phosphorescent vines.
What is the name of that forest?
Oh, it's just all six seasons, doesn't say. Musk deer scent the air. Chamari cows clean the forest floor with their bushy tails. So we've got the sweepers are the chamari cows who clean the forest. 14. Okay. So this is the Vrindavan which we are not seeing yet.
It seems that in that Vrindavan, all these seasons exist all at once.
Do they? Well, it says in one forest they do. Oh, that's true. Yeah, another way of looking at it is all the seasons exist at once in different places. So if you want to go to monsoon, you can. And it'll be raining. And if you want to experience fall, or if you're too hot from the summer, go to the winter forest. Like, I know devotees, they go south for the winter and north for the summer in India. Or they go west for the summer and here for the winter, and you know, they try to. So in Vrindavan, you don't have to, you just have to go to a different forest. Or if you want two together, or if you want six together, just take your pick. Well, it's up to Krishna, where he wants to have his fun, and that's where we go. Okay. Verse 60. So the next level of reality is Vrindavan. First, he just saw the universe and himself, now he saw Vrindavan. And another verse about Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a transcendental abode of the Lord, where there is no hunger, anger, or thirst. Though naturally inimical, both human beings and fierce animals live there together in transcendental friendship. So here's the ultimate reality. Even the animals, the fierce animals, are friends with the devotees. So Prabhupada says that the word van means forest. We are afraid of the forest, do not wish to go there. But in Vrindavan, the forest animals are as good as demigods, for they have no envy. So the animals in Vrindavan. Even in this material world, in the forest, the animals live together. And when they go to drink water, they do not attack anyone. So they respect if they drink. Envy develops because of sense gratification. But in Vrindavan, there is no sense gratification, for the only aim is Krishna's satisfaction. Have you experienced that? In Vrindavan, there's no sense gratification? Material.
Sometimes.
Yes?
I experienced in the way that if you're trying to enjoy.
Yeah. Yes, if you're trying to enjoy, or even if you just depend on the normal course of activities, then it's not going to work. electricity, water, you know, things like this. Any day, they can go. So you can't, or you anyway, so many things are there. So many things, so many ways that you can't, you think you're, okay, finally I've got it made, and then something, another thing happens. I've got my lights, I've got my water, the gas runs out. you've got your water, your light, and your gas, but your mind is your mind is, you can't sleep at night. Everything's perfect, all your material conditions, but then the night comes and you're awake for no reason. Just mind is very active. Why should we sleep? Okay, anyway, yeah, so that, you know, it's Vrindavan. Then you have to think of Krishna. You have to. You're in Vrindavan. You have to take shelter in Krishna. What to do when you can't sleep at night? Chant extra rounds. What else? Get up and read. That'll make you fall asleep fast. Yeah. Now, I had the habit since I was very young to read myself to sleep. And I can't do that anymore because my eyes aren't good enough. But, yeah. Okay. So, yes. Here we're talking about envy. The sadhus keep cows. Even in this material world, the animals in Vrindavan are not envious of the sadhus who live there. The sadhus keep cows and supply milk to the tigers, saying, come here and take a little milk. Well, that was a long time ago. But there are no tigers now, as far as I know. I don't think they have a chance between here and Delhi. I don't think so. At least between here and Chatigar. Okay, come here and take a little milk. So this was like maybe 500 years ago. Thus, envy and malice are unknown in Vrindavan. That is the difference between Vrindavan and the ordinary world. So if you want to know if you're living in Vrindavan, means you have no envy. We are horrified to hear the name of Van, forest. But in Vrindavan, there is no such horror. Of course, we're not horrified. We just think it's a nice place to go for a walk. But before, it used to mean jungle. Forest would mean like jungle. Means like jungle is the word, actually more like the appropriate word in this connection. Jungle. Jungle, there's animals and fierce animals and things. But in Vrindavan, there is no such horror. Everyone there is happy by pleasing Krishna. So here's the clue, or the secret, how to be happy. If you want to be happy, try pleasing Krishna instead of your own self. Try to please Krishna. Krishna kirtanaga nanartana paro. Whether a Goswami or a tiger or other ferocious animal, everyone's business is the same, to please Krishna. Even the tigers are also devotees. This is a specific qualification of Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, everyone is happy. The calf is happy, the cat is happy, the dog is happy, the man is happy, everyone. Everyone wants to serve Krishna in a different capacity, thus there is no envy. One may sometimes think the monkeys in Vrindavan are envious. Yes, we do think the monkeys in Vrindavan, because they cause mischief and steal food and take your glasses and bite you and so many things. But in Vrindavan we find the monkeys are allowed to take butter, which Krishna himself distributes. Krishna personally demonstrates everyone has the right to live. This is Vrindavan life. Why should I live and you die? No, that is material life. Inhabitants of Vrindavan think, whatever is given by Krishna, let us divide it as prasadam and eat. This mentality cannot appear all of a sudden, but it will gradually develop with Krishna consciousness. By sadhana, one can come to this platform. So our sadhana should bring us to the platform of being good prasad distributors here, and seeing everyone equally in Vrindavan, monkeys, but don't try to feed the monkeys. Still. Yes. But I saw an example of how Vrijbasis, they see equally. I mean, there are many examples. So one monkey at MVT, he hit the electric wire and he fell down. He was dying, actually. And Vrijbasis, there were two or three there. They were giving water to the monkey. They were massaging him with oil and turmeric to make him feel better. Fanning, yeah, they were just like that with this monkey. And then the police came to investigate the death of the monkey dying. I said, why did the police come? He said, yeah, because, yes, they have to find out why is this monkey dying. If we die, they won't come, but if someone can, for the monkey, they'll come. Unfortunately, the state of affairs. But this is happening. And one of our students before Patri, he said he was taking bath in Jamuna at 9 o'clock at night one night, and he saw one boy massaging the dogs. You know, flea bitten. You know how they look, the stray dogs at the bank of the Jamuna. And he said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Yes, these dogs. I sleep here at night. These dogs are protecting me at night while I sleep. They're good dogs." Massaging the dogs. So anyway, yes. And so this is the Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada says, if we do our sadhana, we'll come to this level of Krishna consciousness. So I'd like to read a few verses at this point from Chaitanya Charitamrita explaining the relationship of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the animals. And also when he went to, on his way, and also when he was in Vrindavan. This is Madhya Lila, 17th chapter. Actually, he's coming through Vrindavan. Krishna Krishna kaha kari prabhu jabe balila Krishna kahi byagramika nachita lagila. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Chant Krishna, Krishna." The tigers and deer began to dance and chant, "Krishna." Nache kunde vyakra ganam rikki gana sange balabhadra bhattacharya dekhi apurvanange. When all the tigers and does dance and jump, Balabhadra bhattacharya saw them and was struck with wonder. Vyagra mrika anyane kare alingan mukhe mukhadiya kare anyanye chamman. Indeed, the tigers and deer began to embrace one another, and touching mouths, they began to kiss. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw this fun, he began to smile. Finally, he left the animals and continued on his way. Then later on, Patte gabi gata chare prabhure dekhya prabhuke bedaya ashi hunkar kalya. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passed through Vrindavan, herds of grazing cows saw him pass, and immediately surrounding him, began to move very loudly. Gabhi dekhi stapta prabhu premer tarange vatsaya gabhi prabhur chate sabange. Seeing the herds approach him, the Lord was stunned with ecstatic love. The cows then began to lick his body out of great affection. Shistoya prabhu kore anga kanduang prabhu shange chali nahi chare denugan. Coming pacified, Lord Chaitanya began to caress the cows, and the cows, being unable to give up his company, went with him. Kashtashiste tenu sab rakhila goyal prabhukantanishini ashe mikpal. It was only with great difficulty the cowherd men were able to keep the cows back. Then, when the Lord chanted, all the deer heard his sweet voice and approached him. And so it's just the Leela we saw in this Leela, the cowherds, the men, they couldn't stop the cows from going to the calves. So when Lord Chaitanya was here, the cowherd men couldn't stop the cows from going to Lord Chaitanya. The same idea. Migamrigi mukadeki prabhuang chate bhaya nahi kore shange jai bate bate. When the does and bucks came and saw the Lord's face, they began to lick his body. Not being at all afraid of him, they accompanied him along the path. Shukka pika bringa prabhu re dekhi pancha pancham gai shuki gana nitta kori prabhu age jai. Bumblebees and birds like the parrot and cuckoo all began to sing loudly on the fifth note, and the peacocks began to dance in front of the Lord. Yeah, about the deer, somebody from New Vrindavan told me that there, when Prabhupada used to take his walks, some deer would follow him. There was one deer, yes, there was a baby deer would follow Prabhupada up and down for his whole walk. And then the deer started growing up, and then Prabhupada came next, and the grown-up, they were wondering, they saw the deer with its children and the flock, it was there running. They wondered if the deer was going to come, and sure enough, the deer broke away and came and walked and followed Srila Prabhupada on the walk. And so these animals, yes. And then we were just, here's the bumblebees and birds singing on the fifth note. What's the fifth note? What's the significance of that? Huh? It's the flute. It's the flute of Krishna which calls the gopis. Fifth note. I don't know. Fifth note. Okay. Yeah. So, in our Bhagavatam class, we had this about Bindu Sarovar. There, all the birds and the bees, all the birds were chanting Hare Krishna, Prabhupada says in the purport. And so, yes, that's interesting. Even if you get to go to a pious place in this world, the birds will be chanting. But one time, and there was a morning walk, and Srila Prabhupada was hearing the birds in the park in New York, in Central Park in New York, and he said, they're chanting Hare Krishna. And the devotee said, really, are they chanting Hare Krishna? Prabhupada said, sounds like it to me. So, it doesn't sound like it to us, but it sounds like it to Prabhupada. So it depends on your consciousness. But here they are chanting. If you hear the bees, actually, it sounds like if you go into a crowded temple and devotees chanting japa, it sounds like a beehive. Sounds like Hare Krishna, Mantra. Okay, bumblebees and birds. Prabhudeki Vrindavane Bikalatakane Ankur Pulaka Matu Ashur Varishane. Upon seeing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the trees and creepers of Vrindavan became jubilant. Their twigs stood up and they began to shed tears of ecstasy in the form of honey. And it's described later on. Oh, okay, I'll read the next verse. Phula phala bhari dala pori prabhupai bandhu deke bandhu jana mhetaloya jai. Tree branches and creepers overloaded with fruits and flowers fell down at the lotus feet of the Lord and greeted him with various presentations as if they were friends. So this was, we'll hear this verse in chapter 15. That I think it's in chapter 15, that the creepers and the trees offering obeisances, offering the fruits and flowers to the feet of the Lord, it's just as if they are like yogis who are manifesting the Lord in their hearts. Vishnu is manifesting in their hearts, and they're bending down and offering obeisances, and they're getting fresh sprouts. That is their ecstasy, and seeing the Lord. So with Lord Chaitanya, of course, is the same. Prabhu deki brindavanir stavar jangam anandita bandhu jana. Thus all the moving and non-moving living entities of Vrindavan became very jubilant to see the Lord. It was as if friends were made happy by seeing another friend. Yeah, so these trees, they know when Krishna comes. They know when Lord Chaitanya comes. Seeing their affection, the Lord was moved by ecstatic love. He began to sport with them exactly as a friend sports with his friends. Thus he voluntarily came under the control of his friends. He began to embrace each and every tree and creeper, and they began to offer their fruits and flowers as if in meditation. So Lord Chaitanya, how he reciprocated with the trees. He started to embrace the creepers and the trees, each and every one. So then the Lord's body was restless and tears, trembling and jubilation were manifest. He said very loudly, chant Krishna, chant Krishna. Stavar janga mili kore Krishna tane Prabhur Gambhir Sare Janapati Dane. All moving and non-moving creatures then began to vibrate the transcendental sound of Hare Krishna, as if they were echoing the deep sound of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that's a wonderful, amazing scene. Lord Chaitanya is chanting, telling the trees to chant, and all the trees are chanting Hare Krishna back, like an echo. The Lord then clasped the necks of the deers and began to cry. There was jubilation manifest in the bodies of the deer, and tears were in their eyes. So, this is Vrindavan. In Garga Samhita, it tells a little bit of what's happening here again, the different layers of reality. Aware that Brahma had no power to continue gazing at the Lord's glories, Krishna at once pulled the curtain of his illusory potency. Then, his eyes covered, the creator Brahma became as if asleep. Awakening, and with difficulty opening his eyes, he saw Vrindavan and he also saw himself. Now composed and peaceful in the 10 directions, he saw, filled with flowering Vasanti vines, charming and beautiful Vrindavan, where without any enmity, fawns play with the tiger cubs. So here in Garga Samhita, it says in Vrindavan, the baby deer are playing with the baby tigers. That would be a sight, huh? Doves play with eagles. So doves are the food for eagles. And snakes play with the mongoose. Mm-hmm. Mongoose eats snakes. Mongoose eats snakes. So this is what he's seeing now, where everyone is peaceful, there's no envy. Vrindavan, the real Vrindavan. So verse 61. Then Lord Brahma, now next reality. What can be more real than Vrindavan? Then Lord Brahma saw the absolute truth, who is one without a second, who possesses full knowledge, who is unlimited, assuming the role of a child in a family of cowherd men, and standing all alone, just as before, with a morsel of food in his hand, searching everywhere for the calves and his cowherd friends. So here is reality. Krishna is one, but there is a verse in the Vedas which explains what he does. Even though he's one, he expands himself. Eko boho syam. So this was an example of how Krishna expanded himself for pleasure. And the purport Prabhupada says, the word agada bodham, meaning full of unlimited knowledge, is significant in this verse. The word, the Lord's knowledge is unlimited, therefore one cannot touch where it ends, just as one cannot measure the ocean. What is the extent of our intelligence in comparison to the vast expanse of water in the ocean? On my passage to America, how insignificant the ship was, like a matchbox in the middle of the ocean. Krishna's intelligence resembles the ocean, for no one can imagine, one cannot imagine how vast it is. The best course, therefore, is to surrender to Krishna. Don't try to measure Krishna. So the scholars, the impersonalists, the scholars, they try to measure Krishna. When they comment on Bhagavad Gita, or they comment on Krishna's lila, they try to measure. But what is their intelligence in comparison to the ocean? They cannot measure. What is the example, the analogy that we think about measuring something? And the scholars? Yes, Nanda? The frog in the well. He's trying to measure. Can't even measure his own well. What to speak of what's outside the well?
So the analogy of the elephant?
Elephant?
You cannot fathom.
Right.
Yeah,
seven blind men trying to figure out what is an elephant. One says it's a snake, long like a snake. One says it's got very flappy. And one says it's like tree trunks. So according to which angle you look at Krishna, he appears differently to you. And that's your reality. Now in this world, which part of Krishna are people looking at? Raise your hand. Yashoda? Huh? Viratrupa, okay. Which part?
The back.
The back. Everybody here has turned their back on Krishna. They're looking. So what do they see? They're going to see the back of Krishna. And what's in the back of Krishna?
Adharma.
Adharma. Lila Madhuri, you said? Yeah, same. External energy, yes?
I'm just
going to
say it's
irreligion. Irreligion, adharma, is there in the back? Okay, so if you see the back, what else do you see? Very impersonal. Impersonal side of Krishna. You don't see his beautiful smiling face. You don't see these things. You just see the back. The back. The shadow. Also, you see the shadow of reality. You see the back. Not very interesting to see the back of Krishna. Much more interesting to see the front. What's in the front? So that's why when we talk to each other, we don't talk back to back. We talk front, talk face to face. It'd be quite interesting to have a back to back conversation. So that's what we're trying to do. We turn our back on Krishna, and then with our back to him, we say, well, how come he's not talking to me? Yes, why doesn't he speak? Yeah, well, turn around. Maybe he will. Turn your face to Krishna. Look at Krishna. So paragraph 3. Now Brahma saw Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing as a cowherd boy in Vrindavan, not demonstrating his opulence, but standing just like an innocent boy with some food in his hand. Loitering with his cowherd boyfriends, calves and cows. Brahma did not see Krishna as Chaturbhuja, the opulent Narayan. Rather, he simply saw an innocent boy. Nonetheless, he could understand that although Krishna was not demonstrating his power, he was the Supreme Person. Before, he might have had some doubts. But now he knows better. This little 5-year-old innocent boy is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. People generally do not appreciate someone unless he shows something wonderful. But here, although Krishna did not manifest anything wonderful, of course he did before, Brahma could understand the same wonderful person was present like an ordinary child, although he is the master of the whole creation. This Brahma prayed, Govindamati Purushangama Majami. You are the original person, the cause of everything. I bow down to you. This was his realization. Tamaham Bhajami. This is what is wanted, Prabhupada says. Vedeshu Durlabham. One cannot reach Krishna merely by Vedic knowledge. Adurlabham Atma Bhaktau. But when one becomes a devotee, then one can realize him. Brahma therefore became a devotee. Yes, we should all become devotees. In the beginning, he was proud of being Brahma, Lord of the universe, but now he understood, here is the Lord of the universe. I am simply an insignificant agent. Govindamadi purushantamaham bhajami. Krishna was playing like a dramatic actor. Because Brahma had some false prestige, thinking he had some power, Krishna showed him his real position. Similar incident occurred when Brahma went to see Krishna in Dwarka. When Krishna's doorman informed Lord Brahma had arrived, Krishna responded, which Brahma? Ask him, which Brahma? The doorman relayed this question and Brahma was astonished. Is there another Brahma besides me? He thought. When the doorman informed Lord Krishna, it is four-headed Brahma. Lord Krishna said, oh, four-headed. Call others. Show him. This is Krishna's position. For Krishna, the four-headed Brahma is insignificant, to say nothing of four-headed scientists. Four-headed scientists. They only have one head, but they think they have four. They're so intelligent. So, in this universe, only four heads. Other universes, so many heads. Prabhupada says, materialistic scientists think that although this planet Earth is full of opulence, all others are vacant. So this is very, so proud. Only our place has life. And nobody else, nowhere else is there any life except here in this Earth. Because they simply speculate, this is their scientific conclusion. But from the Bhagavatam we understand, the entire universe is full of living entities everywhere. Thus it is the folly of the scientists, although they don't know anything, they mislead people by presenting themselves as scientists, philosophers, and men of knowledge. So they're not even scientists. They can't even call themselves scientists. They're not scientists. They're just misleading. Because why can't they call themselves scientists? What's a scientist? Someone who studies the truth, Leela Madhuri? Someone who can present a theory which can be proven? What was that? I didn't get that.
I said in the Bhagavad Gita in the 7th chapter.
Yeah. Mayaya Pritagana.
That I go. The real philosophers and the
Oh, the real philosophers. Okay. Yeah. You're talking about the real ones. Okay. The real ones are the Acharyas, of course. But these people, so a real scientist is an Acharya. So what does that mean if you're an Acharya? This is something a scientist won't do. Yes?
Acharyas are those who accept descending knowledge.
And? What else? Who else is?
They
yes.
Refer to Shastra.
Refer to Shastra. And they act. Yes, according to example. The scientists are, you can't follow. You don't want to follow their life. And what kind of lives they lead. But the Acharya teaches by example, and they are the real scientists. Of course, we had some scientists, devotees we have, who are real scientists. Prabhupada, we quote this verse, a real scientist will use science to prove the existence of God. So these are the real scientists. Yes?
Just a consideration of, if you are speaking about different levels of reality, And mostly the scientists, they are on the lowest level.
Yes, they are.
Where the Acharya can speak about how to conduct an experiment that leads to the higher reality.
Yes. Prabhupada was always challenging us, just make an experiment of this one life. He says, you can gamble. He says, we are gambling, actually. We're gambling this life. That Yes, that Krishna is the Lord, that Vrindavan is there, and if we follow him, we will go there. So that's our gamble, Prabhupada said. We can gamble that much. Gamble this life for Krishna. Yes, the acharyas, they are seeing a much higher level of reality. They're seeing way beyond. Because the scientists don't see beyond matter in the body, but there's so many higher levels of reality than matter. Yes?
It's only a gamble in the beginning, isn't it? Because according to Shastra, we're supposed to, it's like you go on a journey, you follow the map. Eventually, you, at some point, you're actually convinced that the map's correct. You pass a certain milestone.
Gotcha. It's like having a map. That's a nice analogy. So you're following a map, and then when you go on the map, when you reach a certain place, you say, oh yeah, the map said this is here. And this is, and yes, I see it's here. So then you get faith in the map. So we're following a map here. Okay, that's a good analogy. So what's the map? Madhurya Kadambani, yes? Yes, yes. That's it. It's just like the boat they've left behind. We have the experiences of the previous devotees, and there we are hearing them. We're hearing in Bhagavatam. Yes?
Yes?
410. Okay, 410. How they attain transcendental knowledge of me. Yes, so we are following the map left by the previous acharyas. Mahajano yena kata sapanta. That path. So the path is there. Lord Brahma calls it the Paramahansa path. Path of the Paramahansas. What is it? Panta. Yeah, and Kapila Dev says Paramahansa gati. The path of the previous acharyas. So we are following that path and that map which they have left for us. We are very fortunate. Verse 62. After seeing this, Lord Brahma hastily got down from his swan carrier, fell down like a golden rod, and touched the lotus feet of Lord Krishna with the tips of the four crowns on his heads. Offering his obeisances, he bathed the feet of Krishna with the water of his tears of joy. So now Brahma, as soon as he got this realization, he acts and he falls down in front of Krishna. That's the first thing he does. He just falls down like a rod. Purport, Lord Brahma bowed down like a stick, and because Lord Brahma's complexion is golden, he appeared to be like a golden stick lying down before Lord Krishna. When one falls down before a superior, just like a stick, one's offering obeisance is called dandavat. Danda means stick, and vat means like. That's pretty heavy. If you just fall down like a stick, that's one thing. I mean, I see devotees offering obeisances, and it's more gentle. But if you actually do it that way, it's kind of. You've seen people doing that, falling like a stick.
Yeah. Very amazing.
Yeah.
Straight.
Don't try it. Yes, you watch how a stick falls down. How does it feel? So this is the dandavat. Now it's become in Hindi language dandavat. They don't go through the whole actually what it means if they thought what they were saying. Dandavat means I fall before you like a stick. It's easy to say but hard to do. So yes, this is dandavats, and it originated from Lord Brahma. Dandavats. It is not one should simply, here Prabhupada says, it is not one should simply say dandavat. Rather, one must fall down. Thus Brahma fell down, touching his forehead to the lotus feet of Krishna, and his crying in ecstasy is to be regarded as an abhishek, bathing ceremony of Krishna's lotus feet. So he gave an abhishek to Krishna with his tears. We'll go to paragraph 3 of the purport. Lord Brahma saw that Krishna in his form as a cowherd boy was para Brahman, root cause of everything, but was now appearing as a human child, loitering in Vrindavan with a morsel of food in his hand. Astonished, Lord Brahma hastily got down from his swan carrier and let his body fall to the earth. Now this is very significant. Usually the demigods never touch the ground. But Lord Brahma, voluntarily giving up his prestige as a demigod, bowed down on the ground before Krishna. Although Brahma has one head in each direction, he voluntarily brought all his heads to the ground and touched Krishna's feet with the tips of his four helmets. Although his intelligence works in every direction, he surrendered everything before the boy Krishna. It is mentioned that Brahma washed the feet of Krishna with his tears. Here the word sujalai indicates his tears were purified. As soon as bhakti is present, everything is purified. Sarvapadi vinirmuktam. Therefore, Brahma's crying was a form of bhakti anubhava, transformation of transcendental ecstatic love. So I'll just read a little bit about Vishwanath, because when I read this, I thought, well, how is he doing all four heads at once? As, you know, trying to imagine, you know, as my mind will, curious mind. Oh, he's got four heads now. When he puts one down, what's the one, and how does the one, how does he bring them all in front? Can he do that? It's here. I'm going to read it. It's here in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary here. He says, because Brahma's foreheads were facing in four directions, to touch the Lord's feet, he had to fall on the ground and raise himself again and again. So one head got down, then he got up, fell down for the next head, then he got up, fell down for the next head. So he had to do it at least four times to get every head on the feet. So we don't have that problem. No. He bathed Krishna's lotus feet with a profuse outpouring of tears. Okay, so that is Lord Brahma. We'll go to the next verse, verse 63. Rising and falling again and again. So that's why he kept rising and falling again and again, because he wanted to get each head on the feet of Krishna. At the lotus feet of Lord Krishna for a long time, Lord Brahma remembered over and over the Lord's greatness he had just seen. Purport, we'll just read the prayer that you should be familiar with by now. Shutim apare smitim itare bhartamanye bhajantu bhavabhitaha ahamiha nandam vande asyalinde parambrahma. Let others study the Vedas, Smriti and Mahabharat, fearing material existence, but I shall worship Nanda Maharaj, in whose courtyard is crawling the Supreme Brahman. Nanda Maharaj is so great that the Parabrahman is crawling in his yard, therefore I shall worship him. And so this is Brahma's realization. This little boy is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. 64. Then rising very gradually and wiping his two eyes, Lord Brahma looked up at Mukunda. So it looks like he was still down there. He was looking up. Lord Brahma, his head bent low, his mind concentrated, and his body trembling, very humbly, began with faltering words to offer praises to Lord Krishna. Purport. Brahma, being very joyful, began to shed tears, and he washed the lotus feet of Krishna with his tears. Repeatedly he fell and rose as he recalled the wonderful activities of the Lord. After repeating obeisances for a long time, Brahma stood up and smeared his hands over his eyes. Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, the word lochane indicates, with his two hands he wiped the two eyes on each of his four faces. Wow. Must be something to have four heads. You have to, if you cry, then you got to wipe eight eyes instead of two. Seeing the Lord before him, Brahma began to offer prayers with great humility, respect, and attention. Okay, I've got something from Krishna Samhita. Krishna Samhita. And this is about the Anartha. We already heard about the Anartha. It's thinking Aishwarya is better than Madhurya. And there's also karma and jnana, to be free from karma and jnana. That's the Anartha. And here, let's see what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. I can't read it. O Shastravi Charena Samoho Vartate Satam Eva Saptamo Lakshya Brahmano Mahane Kila. If one intensely absorbs his mind in various arguments, opinions, and their respective literatures, then all realizations attained through samadhi are practically lost. This is called illusion based on the flowery words of the Vedas. Being overwhelmed with this illusion, Brahma doubted the supremacy of Krishna. The Vaishnavas should regard this illusion as the seventh obstacle. This one is 132 of Krishna Samhita. Chapter 8, verse 19 of Krishna Samhita. Okay, any comments or questions on these verses? Yes. He has a body. His whole universe is the body. The whole universe, is also his body. As we learned from, it's the measurement of seven spans, this universe is the measurement of his body. So it's also, everything we see in the universe is part of Brahma's body as well.
I think he got his intelligence from his wife.
No.
It's written here. It's written here.
What's written?
Oh,
intelligence.
His energy.
Okay, I thought you meant the wrong intelligence. I thought you were blaming it on her. His misused intelligence. We can't figure out like that, yes. But his body is made of the universe, so therefore everything is there. But at the same time, it's subtle. He has a subtle... His body is subtle. But at the same time, it contains everything in the whole universe. So, again... We cannot try to figure it out with our intelligence. That's one lesson we're supposed to learn from this pastime, that with our intelligence, we cannot figure out all these things. But simply whatever we know from Shastra, that we know and that we can repeat. Well, everything is in relationship to Krishna consciousness. If there is a scientist who's Krishna conscious, then he's intelligent. And that's also what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Mayaya Prita Jnana. If they don't surrender to Krishna, then their knowledge is stolen by illusion. If they do surrender, then they're his favorite. The jnanis is most dear to me, Krishna says. If those scholars and scientists surrender to Krishna, then they are the favorites of Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. Same with women. Women who don't surrender, then they'll drag you in Maya. And if they do surrender, then they'll take you to Krishna. They take you to Krishna, then there are gopis and lakshmis. Yeah, 28, what is 8th Manu? No, 7th. 7th Manu, 28th. Yeah, about midday. Little before noon.
So that doesn't mean Brahma forgets it every time, or this lila happens only sometimes?
Yeah, I was also wondering about that. That Brahma gets bewildered every day. Yeah. Does he get bewildered every day and steal the cows and calves? I mean, we have days like that. We get bewildered. We learn something one day and then the same thing bewilders us the next day, you know, as if it never happened before.
It's not early in the morning either.
No, it's in the middle of the day. Yeah. But you know, he has Krishna has his lila. If Krishna wants, then Brahma's going to get bewildered every day after day, just so he can have his lila. Now, what to do? Even every night he goes to sleep and he forgets how to create when he gets up. You know, so what to speak of in the day? You know, that was a long time ago. The last day. I mean, it was how many millions of years ago? I mean, for us. Well, it was ages ago. So many things happened in Brahma's day. 14 manus and 1,000 chaturyugas. And of course, what is his awareness of all these things? And you know that we don't know. But yeah, it's quite possible he can be bewildered day after day, as he does when he sleeps at night, and then he gets bewildered and he has to pray and do his mangalarti in the morning, worship Krishna. Yeah. Yeah, but this one is the original because it's described. It was up in the If you read the verses carefully, you'll see that it was in the celebration after Agasura reached up to to Satyaloka. So from that you can understand that this was the Brahma up in Satyaloka.
How are those two Brahmas connected? The Vairaja and the
Expansion. Brahma expands. Shiva expands. There's Shiva in Kailash. There's Shiva up in Mahakala. There's expansions.
Is this matter like his summer house?
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, all the demigods have their places. I mean, the main demigods have their places. Yamaraj has his place on Meru, as well as south. Varuna. They all have places around Meru. A lot of, even the demigods seem to have to be expanded. You know, they're in more than one place at once. They have that ability to expand. Which is quite convenient because it was described that on Mount Meru, the demigods were having their meeting. And so if you don't want to go to the meeting, you can just expand and go to the meeting. Your expansion. Expand one expansion, go to the meeting, the other expansion can stay up in heaven and have fun. That would be nice, huh? Send your expansion to the meeting. Oh, first become a demigod, but we don't want to become demigods. Okay, yes? Anything else? Any other questions? Yes, that was... So this one's the one from Brahma Loka. From studying the verses, the previous verses. Aibo, wait a minute. Class isn't over yet. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, he was up in some concert, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay. What? One more question. Okay, it's a drawback on the part of the devotees not to accept the who? Tattvavadis. Not to accept, yes, the Madhvacharya followers do not accept Brahma Vimohan Lila because he is the head of the Sampradaya and they can't accept that Brahma, the head of Sampradaya, could become bewildered. So they don't accept, they take out chapter 14 and 13, maybe. Maybe 13 is okay, but not 14. He can steal them, but then...
They said
Nanda would
be the next problem.
Pardon me? Madhva will be the next. Be the next problem. Why not?
It's mentioned in his biography.
Could be.
Madhvacharya?
Why not? Yeah, he can be next Brahma, but he has to wait a long time for that. He can be. Okay. Yes? Mahajan. That happens all the time. Krishna bewilders himself all the time. His energy bewilders him. His yoga maya bewilders him. We've seen examples of that. We've seen examples. Okay? All glories to Srila Prabhupada.